Hey, girlfriends, welcome to another episode of Girlfriends and Goals. We're your hosts, Miosha
and Samaria.
This podcast is a space where we'll talk about friendships, life goals, a little bit of pop culture, and all things womanhood.
Our top goal this year is to grow our podcast audience. So if you're new here or you're an avid listener of this podcast, please subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating, write a review, and be sure to share this episode with a girlfriend or two. All right, so we're going to kick this episode off with our segment called Girlfriend Check-In, and that's pretty much where we check in with each other and ask a question, either from a conversation starter game or from the internet, which today is just a random question from the internet. Today's question is, what is your favorite family vacation? So, Miosha, what has been your favorite family vacation that you've been on?
My favorite family vacation to date involves a trip that I took on a cruise with my immediate family. So at this point, I must have been like a senior in college. I went back home, and for Christmas break, my mom was like, oh, we're going to take the whole family on the cruise. And so it was about, say, 8 of my family members. So my immediate family, and then a few other people. And so part of what makes this one of my favorite family vacations is so many funny things happen. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just from the moment we got in the car on the ride there, which took about 2 hours, mm-hmm. it just felt like nonstop laughter. Just so many things happened. But one of the things I'll share that happened, which almost stopped us from going on the cruise, but we did make it on the boat, was one of my cousins who's elderly came on the cruise with us. And I'd say he was probably like in his late mid 70s at that point, but still able to get around. And one of my favorite cousins, always a good time.
Yeah.
And so he came with us on the cruise, but for whatever reason, we boarded at different points in time. And so at this point, myself and my mom, a few of the other family members, we had already boarded, and we were in like the mess hall eating lunch. Mm-hmm. And so then my dad and my elderly cousin, they come to the mess hall to meet us. So at this point, we're all eating together. We're still docked, but to our knowledge, our luggage is being loaded onto the boat, mm-hmm. and is going to meet us at our cabin.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're eating and we hear a name being called over the intercom. Can so-and-so report to this deck? Like, it's an emergency. And so they say it a few times and we're just like, wait, they're calling you, cousin.
Right, that's you.
And so myself and my mom and my sister, we were just all there eating like, okay, well, we're not in y'all's cabin. This isn't our business.
Okay.
Y'all men's go figure it out. And so long story short, my elderly cousin had used one of his like really old suitcases, and for whatever reason, he had forgotten that he had these like spare bullets that hadn't been used in like the crevices of the suitcase. And these bullets must have probably been over like 20 years old because he didn't even remember it. And so, long story short, he explained to them like, hey, I don't have a gun. Those must have just fallen within the suitcase.
Sure.
And, you know, they were so old, the bullets weren't even usable. They had like rust on them, but he had to explain to them like, hey, I have no ill intention, you know, to do anything on the cruise. And so thankfully they let him and my dad, who they were rooming together, mm-hmm. in the same cabin, because obviously they wanted to question my dad too. Like, okay, well, you're in the same room.
Okay.
So do you have anything to do with this? And so eventually they make it back to the mess hall and we just laugh about it. And I just remember thinking, like, if I'm on this boat,
Okay.
y'all are going to have to make that 2-hour drive back home because y'all are bringing 20-year-old bullets on the boat or
Oh
whatever.
my
But yeah,
God.
it was so funny. I think from that day for the rest of the cruise, we kept calling him Bullet Man.
Oh man,
Yeah.
that is crazy. Well, you better not mess up our trip over here bringing an old luggage.
We definitely sat there, finished the rest of our lunch, minding our business.
Okay, got nothing to do with me. Do you, side note, do you generally like, not side note, sidebar, but do you generally like cruises? Like, is that your preferred method of vacationing?
It's not. I think one, I have a max on cruises, like 2 to 3 nights. Also, I like when I dock to have more time. So my preferred vacation is to get on a plane or, yeah, and get somewhere and then explore in depth
Yeah.
that place. I think also just depends on the type of vacation you want. When you're cruising, you know, you get a certain point out, you can't really use your phone. So there are perks too. Like, it kind of forces you to relax a bit, unless you're one of those people who likes to party on like the top deck and that's your thing. But if you are looking to disconnect, I feel like cruising is a way that kind of like forces your hand to do that for a decent amount of time, depending on how long you go. So
Got
yeah,
it.
not my first pick, but I'll go on one. Now, I will say after COVID, not so much. I haven't been on a cruise after COVID. So, and I
Yeah.
don't know when I'm going to cruise again. So,
yeah, I've been on one cruise, and for me, that's enough. You know, I can say I did it. I got the experience. It was cool, but I do prefer a vacation where I can step outside and wander, you know? Like, I think the last day and a half to 2 days just kind of on the top deck, like just laid out and relaxing because I just need it outside, you know? And it's nice being out there, but then you're limited to what you can do outside. So that was the downside, but an upside is that they're very affordable.
That too.
Yeah. And you know, you get fed the entire time. Like, it's a really, really good time. We went to the Bahamas, my sister and I went, and yeah, we enjoyed it for what it was, but I remember being on there thinking, yeah, I'm glad I did this. Probably won't be doing it again because I've got the experience, you know? So yeah. So my favorite family vacation, I actually had two, and both of them were family reunions. But this particular one was to Virginia Beach. And the uncle who planned it, he's not like type A at all, you know? So he's not the person who's like, we're going to get here this time, do this that time. And like, he doesn't have everything planned out. So really, the entire trip pretty much felt like we showed up to this place, we had hotels, and that's about all that was planned. Like, we knew we're going to go to the beach and that was it. Like, nothing else was really planned. And so we really figured out what to do on the spot. So we went to the beach, and I think one of my aunts, she came prepared. Like, she had grilled the day before we left because it was within driving distance, Virginia Beach from Atlanta. So we just, you know, the whole family or all the families just kind of met there and drove. But she had grilled the day before they left and brought like a cooler and stuff. She was the only person who was prepared, and thank God for her, because on the beach, we would have had to buy food had she not prepared, you know, and brought everything. So that was how that meal got solved, because meals weren't planned by the person who was planning the reunion. Yeah. So it just happened that, you know, because she was bringing her grandkids and stuff, and she thought, oh, I'll bring more than enough. We were all fed. And then I think one night we went bowling, but one of my cousins paid for bowling, and she paid for 2 rounds. And I remember after the first game, everybody was tired. Like, during the second game, I think maybe 2 people were bowling still, and they were taking everybody's turns. Like, that's how bad it was. Yes. And then for food that night, We went and got Chinese food. Like, it was a Chinese. But it was so funny because so many people showed up. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of times that people almost drowned, myself included. Yeah, it's like, it was just such a wild trip because we're out there and, you know, my cousin's like, oh, come, you know, farther out. It's not that deep, whatever. So we got out there and it really was fine. All of a sudden, the waters just kept on rising and we're like, okay, we got to get back. And I remember like struggling to get back. And one of my cousins like grabbing me and pulling me. And then when I got to a quote unquote good spot, he left me to go check on another cousin. But I guess he didn't know that that cousin could really swim. Mm. And so he was just like, oh, let me go and check on her. So he went out. And so he left me. And then the water started like getting high where I was again. Like it happened again. Man. And thankfully I have a million cousins because others were around me. And so they were able to get to me. And then at the end of it, one of my older cousins, probably let's say maybe 20, 25 years older than me, he was like, oh, you thought it was over today, huh? I'm like, why would you joke like that seconds after I get out of the water? You know, that's so inappropriate. You too old for that. But yeah, it was an interesting trip. To Ooh, say
the family reunion when Samaria almost drowned.
Lord, it was just mercy. Wild, girl. And I remember thinking was, I gotta get back home to my family because I was the only that's not funny. But I remember before I left, my dad was like, don't get in that water because you're gonna end up drinking a whole lot of it. You know, he's like, you're not as strong of a swimmer, you know. So don't get in that water. You're gonna end up drinking a whole lot of it. And mm-mm. That's exactly what happened, which is absolutely gross because I know things were happening in that water that, yeah, I don't even want to think about it, but it was crazy. It was an interesting trip.
But wow, definitely memorable.
It was.
More so, it should, instead of being family reunion, it should be that one time we all met up in Virginia Beach.
It kind of was like that. Like and then I remember not even having a ride back. Because the family I drove up with, like they had come from another state and they came to it. They came to Georgia. And so I was able to ride to the reunion with them. But then they obviously weren't coming back. But I was younger than I didn't think everything through. So thankfully, one of my other uncles rerouted his trip. Like it was a really sweet thing that he did, but yeah, girl.
Wow. Yeah.
Organization was not there.
Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to more family trips. Now with like my own little family unit. We've done a few, but not much since COVID. But yeah, definitely looking forward to that, making more memories. Yeah.
Our thing growing up was a lot of road trips. My dad loved driving, so we would always do a whole lot of road trips, and that was always something to look forward to.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to get into today's topic, which is, can this relationship recover? So an episode ago, we covered the topic, can this friendship recover? And so I thought it would be interesting if we kind of redid the topic, but from the perspective of romantic relationships. And so, Samaria, do you feel like you have different standards for recovering a romantic relationship versus a friendship? Do you think your standards are higher, lower, pretty much the same?
Mm-hmm. I think I'm way more lenient with friends than I would be in a relationship.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think that's just because with a relationship, if you're trying to build a whole life with this one person, you want to make sure that like things that we talked about in that episode, like the pettiness and, you know, not being able to show remorse, all of those things really have to be intact. Whereas with friends, you have multiple friends. So if this one's tripping, like you don't have to talk to them for the rest of the week. You know, you have other friends that you can lean on. And then as far as friendships, you're usually not living within the same house. You're not trying to if your relationship is one that you're planning on making permanent, you're not trying to make any type of permanent decisions with your friends. So I think I am more lenient with friends because the stakes to me aren't as high as a romantic relationship.
Interesting that you say the stakes aren't as high. I saw this video the other day, well, maybe a few weeks ago at this point, where it was kind of talking about how women should put more emphasis on having higher standards in woman-to-woman, like, friendships.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, like, marriage and romantic relationships aren't guaranteed, and not everyone aspires to have that or to get to that point. Yeah. And so it was just talking about how we should have, like, higher expectations in terms of, like, vetting female friendships, and just how important they are, just as we get older. I somewhat agree, but yeah, when you said that, it made me think about that video.
Yeah, I do think I vet my women friendships, so maybe it's a two things can be true type of situation. Like, I just don't think it's as high stakes as the romantic relationships, but I definitely am a person who would say everybody doesn't need to be in your close circle. Everybody doesn't need to know everything about you or even some intimate details about you. So I think both things. I agree with what the lady was saying, not because of the the fact that romantic relationships don't always last. Like, that's true too. But even without that, I think it's important to vet your friends and invest a lot of thought into your friendships with other women. But again, I would tend to be more lenient because, yeah, because the permanence, like, it's not expected for friendships to be the same, you know, throughout the duration of the friendship. And I know that's the same with romantic relationships, but if you're married and if you're someone who's trying to stay married, for example, whether the relationship changes or no matter how the relationship changes, there is still that commitment that has been made. Whereas with friends, you guys can fall off for some time and then come back to being cool again. You guys can mellow out and just never come back to what you used to be, but you have the understanding that you're still there for each other. So yeah, I think I stand by what I have said.
Yeah. And I think she may have been focusing too on, like, the marriage piece, because I think that does make a difference. Like, dating relationships versus marriage is hopefully more permanent. So in my romantic relationship, I'm definitely spending much more time with that person. We're closer. You know, your friends, you're not seeing them day to day. And so when something's off, especially if you live with a person, you know, you want it to be dealt with and addressed versus, you know, even if you're best friends, I mean, there's still somewhat a wall there. You're probably not living with your best friend. You might talk to them once or twice a week. I mean, Samaria and I talk sometimes multiple times a day, but even still, there is somewhat a wall there in that, like, if Samaria don't want to be bothered, she don't have to be bothered. But if this is my romantic partner, it's just different. Like, you're going to be bothered. We live together.
But even if it's not marriage, like, they're going to notice, oh, this person didn't answer my call all day. For example, it's acceptable if you call me and I'm just not in the mood to say, hey, you know, I'll hit you up later this week. But you can't really do that in a romantic relationship. They're going to be like, what did I do wrong? Why can't she talk to me? Why can't she call me back in a few minutes? She got to call me on Friday when it's just Sunday, you know, like, stuff like that.
Yeah. And one other thing I'll add too is, I know for me, because, and I know you have the choice in your friendships, but I think the vetting process, quote unquote, is just a little bit different. And so I don't know, for me, that just puts a little bit more pressure in terms of expectations of what I expect. Okay, like, I've allowed this person to get very close to me. We're intimate. And so my expectations are higher on both sides, for me and that other person, in terms of what would maybe need to go into recovering the relationship.
Okay, that's fair. Do you have certain signs that you would look out for that would determine whether a relationship can recover versus, I don't even want to try it?
Yeah, for me, and I think I may have mentioned this on a previous topic, but intent is very important to me. Like, if I can't gauge what your intent is,
Yeah.
that makes me feel very uneasy. And so that just will cause me sometimes to question even the smallest of things. So if I don't know that you're coming from a good place, that's like a surefire sign, like, yeah, this there's no need to try to recover this. I shouldn't even want to recover it. But yeah, another thing too is if having contact with you after something's happened is triggering for me to let something go. And so, like we talked about in terms of recovering friendships, that sometimes you'll get to a place of forgiveness, but maybe things just aren't quote unquote the same. But obviously, in romantic relationships, you're having much more contact with that person. But for me, if having contact with you, I feel like that's kind of causing me to like not be able to let it go, that like it's still bringing it top of mind. I'm like, yeah, that's a sign that this is probably something that shouldn't be recovered, or I don't want to recover it. It makes me think about in my early 20s, I was dating this guy who decided to lie about his age. And it seems so small and simple, but I just could remember thinking every time I talked to him, I just could not get it out of my head. Like, you really lied about your age?
Right.
Like, wow.
I was talking to a friend the other day, and she's like, she met up with this guy, and she said, I think he lied about his height. I think some like dating app situation. And I
See?
was like, are you sure? And she's like, oh, I just expected to be looking up a little bit more based on what he said. And I don't think the height is a big deal, right? Like she was saying, she didn't think it was a big deal that he had lied about the height. And immediately I thought about the guy that you were just talking about because I'm like, I don't know. I don't like that. It's really small in the beginning, but why be
It's
dishonest?
them taking your choice away. So, like in her example, say she wanted someone who was 5'11", but he's really 5'7". You took the choice away from her to be like, actually, I want to hold out for someone who's 5'11".
Or to just have her be like, I like him despite the height. You know, like you were misleading in the beginning. So I think that's, yeah, but I
Yeah.
immediately thought about him when you said.
Yeah, and yeah, so it I thought of that just, like sometimes you may even want to move past things. You may not even be angry, but just talking to them, seeing them, you just can't get it out of your head, like, why'd you lie about this or why'd you do that? It's just being around them just triggers it for you. Even if you've quote unquote forgiven them. So yeah, I thought about that situation and how I just really couldn't
Move
move
past.
past it. Like, I just that always stuck with me.
Yeah, that's a really good indication, I think, because for me, when I'm not around somebody, I tend to get over whatever they've done to me. So if I come back around you and it's clear that I'm not over, I think that's a really good indicator. I think for me, the sign would be, am I comfortable with other people knowing how this person is acting towards me? You know, and if I can't say that I am, to me, that's a sign that that romantic relationship doesn't need to happen. Like I understand there are always things that a couple's going to keep between the two of them, but if it's something where I would be embarrassed that you said to me or embarrassed about the way that you treated me because I know I deserve better and I know that the people around me would be like, you deserve better, then that's a no for me. That's a sign to me that I need to get out of there.
Yeah, you hear sometimes where, especially the one thing I think of is like infidelity and people being like, oh, well, this person may have been okay with it until it got out. But you're right. It's like, okay, even if it didn't get out, just if people knew, like, would I want that to be something that they know that I'm a part of in terms of a relationship?
Right, exactly. And it's one thing because I've seen this with couples who've gone through infidelity where they're comfortable talking about it. You know, they're at that stage. And I'm like, okay, that's great. But when you know, you're so still so uncomfortable with it and you don't want anybody to ever find out. And yeah, it's just something to look out for, I think.
Yeah, Samira and I came across this young lady on Instagram where her platform is just kind of talking about how God has delivered her and her husband through infidelity on her part. And, you know, I definitely think like there's a space for that type of content. She does get a lot of support, but I do notice that sometimes she's like windmilling in her comments, you know, because you put your business out on a public platform. Yes. And so I kind of wonder, like, you know, if you're in a place where you feel comfortable with the internet knowing, then, you know, not that you expect for people to talk to you crazy, but like the flip side is that people may have criticism or feedback. Mm-hmm. And so, when you brought that up about other people knowing, it made me think about her platform and just how it seems like, you know, like she's okay with, I guess, that being the topic of her platform or like her branding, but I don't know in terms of like the feedback that she gets, because not everyone agrees with, I guess, how public she's being about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you think is the major point of difference in terms of recovering a marriage versus a dating relationship? So we've talked about a friendship versus romantic, but like within the romantic type of relationships, like marriage versus dating, like what's a point of differentiation for you?
As a woman who is not married, I don't know. So it's hard. Okay, it is hard to say, right? Like I can say what I think it might be, right? But it is hard for me to actually say what that difference is.
You know, I asked you that because I was just curious what your answer would be. We're at two different places, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I think with a marriage, I want to say that I would be trying harder. And I don't know if trying harder is it, but maybe trying longer, you know, because there's paperwork involved, but also like families involved and a lifestyle involved. So I want to say that the difference is just that commitment, you know, whereas with dating, you can kind of get out in a clean-ish way, you know, emotions are still going to be there, but yeah, it just seems more complicated with marriage.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The amount of time too that you're trying. Yes. So, you know, like if certain things happen while you're dating, you're probably going to assign a finite amount of time.
Yes.
To kind of like work through certain things so that, you know, one, hopefully you don't carry too much going in when you start. Yeah. Hopefully you can kind of like get certain things to a place where both people are comfortable and happy, at least starting out. But then also that, and I don't know if I want to use wasting time, but to a certain extent, you know, if you know you have certain goals or dreams for your life, you can't just indefinitely, like you're trying to get to a certain point. So you can't just say, okay, well, we'll work on this for 5 years if you know your goal is 3 years. But as a person who is married, and this isn't just based off my marriage, but just like what I've seen amongst other married couples, is just that I think the expectations are different. So I think there's this expectation that even if you can keep trying, that if things aren't perfect, that you're willing to like put in the work and not be too hasty about being like, okay, well, if it doesn't, then that's it.
Yeah.
I think there's this expectation of you to just really try. And more specifically, I think you're trying on things, but I think when you are married, certain things that may have come up before when you were dating, there's this expectation of, okay, but because you're married, you have to work through it. So an example I could think of is like, say you're dating someone and they have an addiction or whatever.
Mm.
Like, I don't know that you would be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and marry this person, and this is something
Right.
you discovered up front. And I'm bringing this up because I saw this dynamic with a YouTube family vlogger style channel a few years ago, where the husband developed a severe drug addiction to painkillers as a result of an accident. But yeah, so like if you meet someone and they're going through that type of situation, I don't know that you'll be like, oh yeah, I'm going to proceed forward.
Yeah.
I think everyone around you, probably your family, your friends will be like, oh yeah, this is probably isn't something that you want to take on up front. However, if you're married to someone and this is a battle that they start going through 5 years into your marriage, the expectation is that you are going to help see them through it as much as you can within reason without hurting yourself, of course.
Yeah, it's just the vows, the for better, for worse, for, you know, like it's the vows that you have to.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you're married. So it's like, okay, well, what comes up is what we'll have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Versus when you're dating, you know, like as a friend, you know, you're single. So I, of course, would encourage you to not try to take on certain things up front when you're just starting off in a marriage. Like, I just would not want that for you. Well, at the same time, if there's a crossroads like later on, I would encourage you, because I know, okay, her marriage is important to her. Her family is important to her.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that expectation is like, okay, within reason, you are going to work on things and see it through.
This is interesting, because a young lady who I know in real life, I was going to say who I follow on Instagram, but I know her for real, for real. But she was saying she thinks it's ridiculous that people even get married because of this, because of that expectation that is put on, but also the expectation that even if you grow into a different person, which we all likely will, right? Not maybe not to completely different people, but we're all going to, you know, be different 5 years from now than we are today, right? And so she thinks it's absolutely insane that people have to get married with those expectations that you mentioned, but also the expectation that even if I become a new person because I committed, because me 5 years ago committed to this person, or me 10 years ago, 15 years ago committed to this person, now I have to continue in that commitment. So yeah, it just reminded me of what she put out there on the internet when you were talking.
And I'd say, you know, not everybody thinks that, because the divorce rate is 50%. So I think there are a lot of people who get married and they grow to a different place in life, or develop in a certain way where you're just not compatible anymore. Yeah. And they decide that, you know, it's not something that they no longer want to be in. But that, I think in general, that expectation is there. I think society puts that on people. And I think we put it on ourselves.
Yeah, I think the beauty in that. So when you first started talking and you said expectations, what I thought you meant was, if I'm in this committed relationship, if I'm in a marriage, right, and something happens and we're both really pissed off at each other, the knee-jerk reaction isn't, oh, I'm about to dip, you know, like, I wouldn't expect the other person who I'm in a relationship with to be like, you know what, based on today's fight, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would expect they're going to take their time, figure out what needs to be communicated, and then we're going to come together and discuss it, not just be out of it. So I think that's one of the beautiful things about a committed relationship, is that there's this expectation that no matter what comes on the table, we're going to try to figure it out together before just thinking about the individual and being like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So since we've kind of talked around things a little bit, are there any stories, personal stories that you have of a time when you've known a relationship can't recover? And what exactly was that process like for you? What led you to believe it cannot be recovered? And then how did you move after you realized that?
Yeah. So I feel like, I don't know, similar to the story that I told on the episode in terms of friendships recovering is I was in a relationship where, I don't know, we were just growing apart. I feel like my relationships are kind of uneventful, like no big bangs happen, which I'm thankful for, but it's also sometimes harder because it takes you more time to kind of maybe put into words or thoughts exactly what's happening if you're just growing apart. But
yeah, so nothing's wrong.
Yeah, like nothing was really wrong. Nothing happened. Mm-hmm. We were just simply growing apart. And I was coming up at a point where I was going to have to get ready for a big move. And so during that time of us growing apart, I think the time and space made me question a lot of things. So, you know, like sometimes when you're very close with someone, you're always talking.
Mm-hmm.
You don't maybe always have as much time to just ponder and think.
Yeah.
So it kind of gave me that time to be with myself. So technically we were still together, but I just had more time to myself than spending time together with that person. And I realized that in that like space away, I started to question like, do I see a future with this person? And I started to question of like, do I even want to marry this person? Now, I was very young,
mm-hmm.
and I can't say that like marriage was at the top of my priority list. It was actually nowhere near it mm-hmm. at that point in time. But just during that time and space, I realized that this wasn't a person I wanted to marry. And that's how I knew that it shouldn't be recovered. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't work to try to get us in communication more, talking more, if I knew I didn't want to marry that person, because even though marriage wasn't a top priority, I knew I wanted to be married one day.
Yeah.
So then I was just like, okay, I'm probably going to be wasting our time by staying here. But that's how I knew it shouldn't be recovered, because at that point I knew marriage wasn't on the table for me, at least.
And I think it hits differently when it's not even your next step, but you're already thinking when that step comes, this isn't the person who I want to take out.
This ain't gonna be it. So I knew like, okay, you could try it. If I would have recovered it, it probably would have worked fine because we had a good relationship. But I just thought like, let's just save us both the time, the energy, and like do it now.
Yeah.
We're both at a place of like really being interested in marriage, and then having to be like, actually, like, you're not the person.
Yeah. And like you said, you were in a place where you were transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like sometimes it's better to just make those clean transitions. Like, I'm leaving this part of my life behind. You might need to stay behind with it.
Oh, yeah. And that's something that I thought, do I want to take this relationship to this new place with me?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that marriage isn't on the table.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I think for me, the time that I can think about is also younger 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of goes in line with what I said earlier about if you wouldn't want other people knowing or other people seeing. But one of the things that came to my mind was, if I have children with this person, am I okay with my children seeing the dynamics of our relationship? And in my opinion, like from what I've seen, a lot of times how a father treats a mother, the children kind of copy how that dynamic mm-hmm. is. Like I was watching The Amazing Race one time. Y'all know I love my game shows. But I was watching The Amazing Race, and it was the one season that they had families on, and they never did this again for good reason. And it was a husband, the wife, and I think they had two boys. And the same way that the dad would be like yelling at the mom, like, why would you do this? Like, that was so stupid. Why would you do that? You know, you could see the kids mimicking that and bullying their mom. And so with this particular person, I remember feeling like, would I be okay with my kids thinking this is the example of how you treat your mother, your future spouse, whatever? And the answer was no. And so before it even got real bad, I was like, no, I need to, because mm-hmm. I would never want my daughters to see you know,
yeah,
me being treated in that way, or, you know, the male figure in their life treating a woman that way. And I would never want sons to see that, you know, type of dynamic either. So yeah, that was the time for me where I'm like, this could never be permanent for me. And I am out. And it was just like one thing that they, I think it was a thing that they said. I was like, okay, eye opener. And, you know, I didn't go around being like, oh, this was why, and this person did X, Y, and Z. It was just something that I knew within myself, like, nope, this is not going to be it. And until this day, sometimes people are like, oh, what happened to such and such? He was not for me. That's it, you know? But yeah, that was why I couldn't risk my future family, you know, being exposed to that.
Yeah, that's so important. You have to be extremely careful. Mm-hmm. You choose to be the parent of your children in the future. Yeah, the stakes are very high. Yeah. So if you are in a place where you've decided that, hey, I'm interested in recovering this relationship, what do you feel like you need to see from your partner to make that possible?
I think I need to see that the person is trying to make amends based off of what I need. So I know there's a lot of cliche advice out there, like, oh, when you mess up, do X, Y, Z. X, Y, Z might not work for me, you know? A, B, C might. And I need to see that the person is invested enough in me to know, or to find out, to discover, and even just ask, what do I need to do? What is acceptable to you to make this recover, or to recover this relationship? So yeah, that's what's most important for me. I need communication. I need a clear effort towards what Samaria needs in order for things to be fixed, because then it shows me that your commitment is to me, and that you want to make things right with me personally, as opposed to, oh, I just want to go through the motions.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I'd add patience too. Patience from my partner, in that this could take time of you doing the things that I specifically need to see.
Yes. Yes. Patience is really key, because people be thinking, oh, I could do this for 1 week and that's it. Like, no, like, I'm trying to introduce you to a lifelong practice, you know, and this is just the starting point of it, was whatever wall we hit, but I need you to do this for eternity, kind of. So that's what you need to be on.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Girlfriends and Goals podcast. You've heard our thoughts on this topic, but we'd love to hear yours as well. So make sure you follow us on Instagram at Girlfriends and Goals podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please go ahead and do that now. And don't forget to rate, review, and share. Until next time, bye.
Bye.